You are about to listen to a live recording of a peer support group intended for people that have a partner or a loved one living with bipolar. If you yourself are living with bipolar, then please be aware of the possibility of being triggered by the stories that are shared. No harm is intended, just a safe place for them to share openly about the struggles they have experienced.
I am the last person who's going to come judge anybody because my hands are dirty as hell too.
Welcome everyone to I'm Married Bipolar. If you have a loved one with bipolar, you are in the right place. And the reason why you're in this space is because you've been attracted to the energy of this room. Because not only are we a peer support group, not only are we advocates and educators, we are beings of love. And this is what we do, is come back to a place where we feel safe, and then we're able to let our guard down and have our energy be restored. So in this moment, if you could just ground yourself while you're here before we start into this moment, and any parts of you that you have given away in conflict or exchanges with people that were too draining for you, I just ask you to pull all those pieces back into yourself now. Anything that you have gone through that has devalued you this week or made you feel just exhausted, that you didn't have options, I want you to take any of that energy, that lower vibrational energy, and just let it vibrate up and out of your body. Just release it like little bubbles into the light and bring yourself back into your body. And any place that you might be missing pieces, that you feel like you ran out of energy, I just ask you to visualize bringing back all the energy from your source that's going to restore you and rejuvenate you and help you to focus on the next steps for your life. Anything that you came here to receive, whatever that was, I know that you will get it. Your intention is to receive, and you will receive exactly what you came to get. And I just ask that your week be blessed and that you can go forward knowing that there is a safe space for you, and that each time you come here, it's a place just for you to restore. And so it is.
What the heck is safety, right? So there's a lot of answers and a lot of variables to what people would define safety. Like, my idea of safety might be different than Bridget's idea of safety, right? So that's why in the focus groups, I really push for you to say what you want, because safety is your baseline. And what happens is when you start saying, I want something, what happened, right, is all the women would start saying, because when he says this to me, it makes me feel like crap. And, you know, he said this a million times and I don't deserve to be talked to like that. And what happens is the defense mechanisms start coming up and I don't feel safe. You know, that comes up. I don't feel safe. He threatens to leave. He's, you know, keeping guns in my house. There's things that, you know, for someone, it might feel safe to have your partner have a firearm in the house. For somebody else, you know, like, absolutely not. That's not safety for me, especially somebody with schizoaffected bipolar. I don't want that in my house. I don't want that risk, you know? So our safety guidelines are going to be different for each person, but you have to ask that hard question. What the heck is safety for me? And is it more than just survival? Like, is it more than just, I don't want you to yell at me? It triggers me because my mom used to yell at me a lot. I don't want you to leave me because my dad abandoned me. I don't want you, you know what I mean? Like, safety is a baseline. It's not the end goal. I mean, we want it as a totality, but to have a healthy relationship, we need more than safety, much more than safety, right? But we spend a lot of time just talking about how to get to safety. And that's what concerns me, because we're still missing the mark on that a lot of times. But these last couple weeks, these last few weeks, actually, since my anniversary, our 11-year wedding anniversary, Chris and I have really dug in and said, like, we need to find a way to be able to be around each other and to be able to work through these critical moments where you're triggered and I'm triggered and not just run away from each other. And he said that out loud to me because I had a hard, healthy boundary. I had set a hard, healthy boundary that no mania in my house, right? That was my safety boundary. No, I'm not going to live with mania, no mania in my house. Well, he has ultra rapid cycling psychosis and mania. So pretty hard for him to come and visit me without any signs. So I knew I threw down a pretty hard gauntlet, and it was triggering for him because the symptom would come up and he'd have to mask really hard. And if symptoms started to break through, I'd be like, well, it's time for you to go home, you know? And I felt empowered finally after all these years of bipolar in my house, me not being able to get away or send him anywhere. There's no bipolar babysitters. There's no bipolar daycare, you know? I was like, oh, you have a place to be now. You have your own apartment. So I'm going to take you home. And then we have to find our way back a little bit because now that was hurting him, that there was no empathy coming from me anymore, that he has an illness that has these symptoms that are going to come through. And I was like, and he said, I'm not feeling right, but I don't want you to send me home. And that was kind of a breakthrough moment, you know? I thought, wow, thank you for saying something. We're going to have to try harder to figure out how we can work together instead of just separating. So that's where the safety plan like really took form, really like came to life. I said, let's not just keep talking about it. Let's actually print it up and use this thing. And I printed up the two most important parts for, you know, immediate recovery is your immediate recovery procedures for him and for me, and our triggers list, his triggers and my triggers. And I printed those up and I've just been like keeping it around, like hanging out on the dining room table and stuff. And it says on mine, all my triggers are things that he does, right? All the things that bipolar does. So when I see him doing those things, and I think I talked about this last week where he'll tell me I need to call his attorney, right? He doesn't have an attorney, but bipolar has an attorney. And when he feels pressured to give an answer about something and he starts dancing around it, he will say, well, you know what? We're going to call my attorney. I'm going to have my attorney call you. And, you know, and he's going to file divorce papers for us because I'm not going to answer this line of questioning. And it gets very professional. And that's on my triggers list is when you tell me to call your attorney, because I know that means this conversation is never going anywhere now. It's over. You're in psychosis. So I'm not going to be heard. I'm not going to be heard anymore. I'm talking to psychosis. And that's a form of rejection for me, you know, when you're having a conversation with somebody that doesn't have psychosis, you hope that you can get through an uncomfortable conversation to say, I'm hurt because of XYZ. But when mania and psychosis take over the conversation, you got to shut it down and it's over and your feelings have to be set aside. So that for me, handing this to him and saying, I need you to see that those things are very triggering to me and it's causing me to have a lot of anxiety. And that's why I'm pushing you away is because I feel like I'm pushed away. There's no more choices for me. There's no connection anymore. So why try? Why stay in the same room? Let's just get away from each other if we're going to be two people that are existing separately, you know? And so I showed him my recovery procedures and his recovery procedures, which the top three are always have you taken your meds? Have you eaten? And have you had any glucose? And if we check those three for both of us, we've been able to get through most things. Just we usually don't even have to get to step four if we've checked those. So the inventory part of safety is very, very handy. And especially with your bipolar loved one, if they can, you know, resolve that it's not an insult to ask, hey, is it okay if I check your med box, or if you just do it yourself, you know, if their meds are somewhere that you can see, or is it okay if, you know, if I ask you if you've taken all your medication today, and if you've had anything to eat, and for our team, we're on the glucose team. Have you had any glucose today? Now he feels like that's a support instead of an insult, because it's on our recovery list. It's on paper. It's not just his wife going, did you eat? Did you take your meds? You crazy cuckoo town. Did you take your meds? Did you take your meds? You know what I mean? It's his partner checking in on his recovery procedures, and he answers, no, I haven't eaten anything. No, I haven't had any glucose. And you're like, okay, well, let's just take care of those first. And then we start recreating safety again to where we don't have to get to crisis. We're handling things in pre-crisis. All right. I just did a lot of talking. You guys got, anybody got anything for me?
But that was beautiful to like watch you both go through that and see Chris being open-minded and open-hearted and realizing, you know, it's not a dig. It's not a personal attack. We came up with this plan together, and we're both participating. Like you said, it's not you harping on him or nagging or things like that. I know that other people on the bottom are going to have the same struggle I do, which is that my partner doesn't even want to make a plan. And they're currently married to somebody else. So it's like, okay, the part of my plan that I can control is what does safety look like for me? And if you can participate in that, wonderful. If you can't right now, then hopefully you will someday. Bring your shit to the table and we can work on it.
That I know. And it breaks my heart to hear that, for as much as you've poured in. That was another vision I had. I was all up in your head today, Davina. With how much you have poured in to a relationship that there was no bottom to the cup, you know? I thought, gosh, what a valuable partner you are, Davina. That, you know, I was thinking about the kind of partner I want for myself. And a lot of your qualities are on that list of somebody that would pour into me, that would pay attention. You know, like you pay attention to me a lot, just as a friend, you know, like you understand the things that I go through. You know, you'll tell me things that I forgot that I said. I value those things so much because I live with a partner that has no short-term memory and struggles with cognition. So when I hear somebody remember something I said, say it back to me in a supportive way or encourage me, you know, with something that I did, I'm like, that is something I value. And anybody else in this room, I believe, would value that in a partner as well. So I want to reflect that to you, that you have a lot of really great qualities just as a human that poured into a partnership. I think you have all the makings of a potentially fantastic relationship, you know, and your rebirth is telling you that, like, no, I have so much to pour in to somebody's cup. Where's mine? You know?
Well, and I'm not going to pour into a colander anymore where it's not appreciated and it's not valued. And instead it's seen as criticism when it's really just genuine concern and compassion. I am the last person who's going to come judge anybody because my hands are dirty as hell too, but I'm trying to do better and make a better life. And it's not going to be easy. Just like, you know, when you and Chris had your struggle and you made it very visible for us to know that, you know, it's always going to be a work in progress, but if you're both working, then it'll progress.
Yeah. In case y'all don't remember, I actually got it on Marco Polo, a whole cycle of Chris in mania into psychosis, and then using the safety plan to de-escalate, and then using the recovery list for both of us. And it took a couple hours, but he looked at mine. I literally was writing mine down while I was sitting 4 feet away from him of what I needed in that moment. And I just wrote it down on the paper there, and he walked over and we started updating it together in the moment, because these are just outlines, right? Like, take your meds, eat some food, take a break, you know, stop drinking coffee, apologize, recognize there is a problem, accept what's happening, you know, like that's all baseline stuff. But then I wrote down, I need to be hugged for my recovery. I want to feel loved for my recovery. It's good for me to sit in the yard or be around nature. It's good for me to feel heard. It's good for me to listen to music. I could use a cup of tea. So I start writing things that make me feel better, not just what I need for him to fix, but actual things of recovery. And he responded so well to this list. It was like the magic formula that he looked at it, because I've been telling him for a million years that we've been together, and he knows how to make me a cup of tea. He knows that's one of my favorite things, is a perfect cup of tea. So he loves when he gets me a cup of tea, and it's right. But I haven't given him anything else. Like, hey, it's okay for you to hug me, even though we're in a disagreement or we're having a tough time. You can ask, you know, you can recommend that we just sit down or sit in the yard. Oh, I'm having emotions because it says to be with my kitty. And here's the thing about spirit, right? Like our fur babies, they have such strong personalities, right? They are a reflection of the home. She literally tickles my back with her tail to sleep. I mean, she's everything. She's my assistant manager. You know, you see her in every meeting. We have tea together every morning. We regroup, we debrief together. We are everything together. I just feel devastated that she's gone. But so I did the same thing with Chris for our recovery list, because I keep spontaneously crying, right? And first of all, I said, I don't want you to leave. I need you to stay here. I need you to come stay with me and don't leave. Just stay here until I give you the okay to go home. And he said, no problem, I'm here. This progress that he said, I'm with you 100%. Whatever you need, I'm right there. And he did. He came to the vet and he stayed there. He walked out a couple times, but he came back. And then he came home with me and he hasn't left my side. And he said, what do you need? And so I wrote it down. I just grabbed a freaking tablet and wrote down what Temple needs while grieving. Number one, to be able to cry. Davina was the one who reminded me that she's never seen me cry before. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. So I need to be able to cry, right? I need to be able to talk about emotions. I need to be held. I need tea. I need food. And I made a list of things he could make me to eat. I need meds. I need rest. I need glucose. And I need to be comfortable. And I need to not be alone for too long. So I wrote this list in like a minute and I handed it to him and he grabbed it and he goes, oh, thank you so much. This is exactly what I need. And he folded it up and put it in his man pack that he carries around on his waist all the time. And, he's been using this frickin' safety plan, Davina. Is that not a fucking birthday miracle? Like, your birthday gave me a miracle, I think. This is definitely a saving grace. If I could get that message to all of you to really lean in to your triggers list, your triggers list, and your recovery procedures, and present your needs to your bipolar loved one, it's a much better response than us telling them to change, right? And Julie Fast lectures us about this all the time, right? What's your needs list? Tell them your needs list. But we keep doing it backwards. I need you to stop doing that. That's what we say. I need you to not be doing what you are doing. But that's not how it works. It's not working that way. But for me to say, and thank you for that reflection, Davina, that it's very difficult to ask for something when you know that person may not be able to give you that. Right? And it's just going to make me more angry. And I'm going to go, see, why do I even bother asking? I have no support. I have to do everything myself anyway. So I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to do it myself. And I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to woman up. And I'm just going to handle this. So I knew I had to lean into it or I wasn't going to get through it. And I was just gambling, really, that this was going to work. But I knew I had to ask, and I was going to ask it in the best way, in the most loving way. And because we already had success with his last manic cycle, I thought, man, I think this might, I'm going to give this a shot. And I just wrote down a needs list. And every time I start to cry and I'm within 2 feet of him, he just walks over, puts his hand on my back and just sits with me. And hands me a Kleenex. He doesn't try to rescue me, but he did exactly what was on the list, was let Temple cry and let Temple talk about her emotions and then give her a hug and ask her if she needs tea or something to eat. And now he's got it. That is it for today. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Good night, everybody. Say goodbye to your friends.
You are the best people. I love you.
If you need support in loving someone with bipolar or in the recovery of being in a relationship with someone with bipolar, find me on my website, templesworld.org. Or if you're interested in any of my classes, Heart Healers, Crisis Recovery, or The Brain Gang, find me on any social media at I Married Bipolar. All classes and coaching are not intended to replace any clinical therapies that you are currently in.
The Married to Bipolar podcast is an OceanTreeCreative.com production.